Welcome to The Lion's Den, a brand new podcast brought to you by The Bluebird, your one stop for all things Cambridge University sport. Following last week's postponement of the Six Nations, today's hosts, Nathan and Charlotte, are joined by Laura Blehan and Corinne Grant, two rugby blues who are part of the Wales and Scotland squads, respectively. Okay, so myself and my co-host Charlotte Cutter are joined now by two rugby internationals from Cambridge University Rugby Club. First of all, we've got Laura Blehan. Laura is a fifth year medic at Girton, and she is involved with the Welsh squad. And with her, we have got Corinne Grant. Corinne graduated last year after doing an MPhil in Criticism and Culture with the English faculty. She is from Corpus and, of course, is currently involved with the Scotland squad. Good evening to you both. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. I guess the first order of business is obviously to start with the unfortunate news that the Six Nations was postponed. The news officially came through the media last week. I guess to start off with, Laura, where were you when you heard the news and how was it communicated to you?
I mean, we'd kind of had some emails that were kind of up in the air about we weren't sure what was going to be happening. And then obviously, officially it was announced. I can't remember where I was, but I mean, I'm pretty sure we were all quite upset about it. Like, it's a shame. Been training hard for it, but obviously, if it's what's best for the game, it's what's best for the game. So,
Corinne, does the fact that a lot of people saw it coming make it any easier, or was it still quite a tough pill to swallow once the news came through?
I think so. You know, like Laura said, there's been a lot of rumours that have been going around already. So I think a lot of us kind of saw it coming. The SRU told us officially, in person, we were at a training session. So we were there to kind of hear it officially face to face, which is always helpful. But in terms of, you know, so it wasn't that shocking, but I think it's kind of the next in a long, long row of speed bumps. So although it's, of course, disappointing, frustrating, but we've had to, you know, overcome a lot in training for Six Nations and obviously for Rugby World Cup coming up in what's under 8 months now. So frustrating, but not something that, you know, it's not deal breaking.
The justification that was given through the official channels was to do with the whole issue of professionalism, and with only one country being fully professional, that being England, and obviously France are semi-professional, the you know, the bubble environment and testing required for international sport for that period of time, the 6 or 7 weeks that a tournament goes on for, was just impossible when you've got four other countries who the majority of their players are going into work every day and can't miss work or school. Obviously, Laura, you know, as a medical student, that kind of fits your bill perfectly. I mean, you're talking to us from your placement in Peterborough at the moment. So obviously that prospect of going into a bubble for that period of time for someone like yourself was just impossible, was it?
Yeah, I mean, we have to be like, I have to remember I am a student first, and like, I do have a medical degree that I need to be present for and learning on the wards. And again, I guess in terms of my commitments to sports, I have to remember that if I can't isolate, I'm putting not only the team at risk, but also patients. And I guess a lot of other players on the team are in similar positions through their work. There's a number of girls on the team that are teachers, and obviously their work is really important. And it just means that obviously we kind of, because it's not professional, we do have kind of that push and pull from obviously wanting to be as present as we possibly can in training and matches, but obviously we also have degrees to study for and jobs to earn money and support ourselves with as well. So yeah, it's kind of a balancing act, I think. And obviously with the Six Nations this year, I think it's had to swing towards postponing. So yeah.
I guess that's the harsh reality of limited professionalism in the game, which I suppose is a longer conversation that we could get into at a different point. But in terms of the Six Nations itself, Corinne, it's a little bit frustrating from the fans' perspective, and obviously from your perspective as well, that a date hasn't been set in stone yet when the announcement came through. And reading and listening to reaction, the impression I get is that there tends to be two schools of thought with this. There tends to be the idea that, well, the tradition is the women's, the men's, and the under 20s all play at the same time. Let's keep it that way. And then there's the counter argument to that. Well, at least at this occasion, it may or may not happen, you know, this side of summer. But if and when it does happen, in theory, it will be the only senior level international tournament going on. And that would be a level of exposure that will be beneficial for the women's game. Are there either of those arguments that you favour one over the other, or is it a tricky one?
You're bang on there. It is a really tricky one. And there's these definite two sides of it, because as you say, traditionally, all three happen at the same time. And in one perspective, you know, you want the women's and the U20s to be part of that because you have such fantastic atmosphere around Six Nations time. You know, it's just that period where everyone gets behind it. You're all out in the pubs and watching and supporting your teams. But obviously this year, you're not going to have some aspects of that anyway. The pubs aren't going to be open. You're not going to have fans in the stadiums, at least for, you know, they've confirmed the first few matches. I can't see really any of the others going ahead with full stadiums. So on the one hand, you know, you don't want to break with tradition, but I think that the postponement does offer some other opportunities, as you said, being a headline, kind of the headline act, if you want, rather than, you know, it's the reality that the women's tournament still does get sidelined in comparison. So I think in terms of things like stadiums, getting first pick of venues, rather than, especially with things like COVID bubbles at the moment, if you're trying to have both the men and the women's and the U20s playing all the same time, I suspect they would have had to prioritise, you know, venues, which would have inevitably gone to the men's. So in terms of venues, in terms of prime TV time, so you're not going to have clashes with the men's tournament, which is again a bonus, because we've seen TV figures, viewing figures have been going up and up for the women's game. So if you can keep getting those prime TV slots, then that's going to help boost fan base ahead of the World Cup, which is a great thing.
It's interesting.
So yeah, definitely two sides.
It's interesting that you mentioned stadiums. That's not something I'd really heard anyone discuss or thought about myself. And it's a really good point. I guess, you know, if the Men's Six Nations aren't going on and Murrayfield is available, what's the barrier there? Because there wouldn't be any fans allowed in anyway. I suppose it's not, wouldn't really be an issue for Wales at the minute, would it, Laura? Because as far as I'm aware, the Principality is still out of action, is it? Are they testing in there? Is that right?
I think it's, I honestly no idea. I'm not associated with obviously the NHS side of things, but over in Wales, but it's definitely still out of action, and who knows, it might need to be used in the coming months, weeks and months. But I guess our basis has been, we were in Swansea over October, November time, preparing for the match against Scotland that was eventually cancelled. And then the men were training in a different location. And it does mean, obviously, like we have got different access to facilities because we couldn't obviously join bubbles. But I don't know. I think it obviously will be a big impact if Wales can be, and Scotland as well, can be playing kind of in their home grounds in Principalities or the Murrayfield come the tournament, whenever that does happen. So yeah,
I mean, it's a really interesting kind of those two sides to the argument of whether to postpone or when to do it at the same time. But I think there's also grounds to maybe say, you know, quite frustratingly, that potentially does the fact that there isn't a concrete date yet for the women's tournament, combined with aspects you just touched on, Laura, there with the kind of different training and stadium issues. Do you think that shows some sort of fundamental kind of institutional disregard for the women's game, that despite the progress we've made, we're still lacking in that aspect? I just wondered what you thought of that, Corinne.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I'd go as far as institutional disregard, but I do agree it is frustrating, especially because, you know, things like broadcast deals, and you want to be, you know, generating excitement for match fixtures and all these things that you need a solid date for. But on the other hand, I guess you'd have the argument that if there are going to be any lessening of restrictions, you know, as we go into kind of late spring, early summer, that if there's the possibility to kind of put those fixtures at times when they might be able to have, you know, a limited or amount of fans or socially distanced, then that is a great opportunity for us to have that, because, you know, we played our match against England last spring in Murrayfield, actually, but it was closed doors. And it's a strange feeling playing in an empty stadium. You know, it does, you know, you can still get that buzz of singing the anthem, but there's no one there to cheer. So I think if they are able to rearrange to a time that there's more vaccines out or COVID situation is looking better, then that is an opportunity for the women's game that obviously wouldn't be present if they kind of rushed through it now.
Yeah, definitely. I think that focus on opportunity going forward and what it could bring to the women's game is definitely very exciting, I think, for you guys, the players and the fans. It, you know, it could potentially even mean, you know, bigger broadcast deals or bigger networks deciding to pick up games, and it might give it a bit more time for, you know, traction, because with one thing, you know, going on at the other, it hasn't been pushed out there as much online. I know I touched a bit earlier on about that element of disregard that unfortunately often cropped up, and I just was going to talk to you guys about obviously some of the stuff that's been circulating online in the past couple of weeks following the announcement of the postponement of the Women's Six Nations tournament, and this backlash of you know, it's hard to not generalize these things, but mostly ignorant male keyboard warriors saying, oh, you know, what is, like, oh, it's just women's sport, why do I care? And, you know, started Eleanor Slosil, the Welsh Leihah, started the hashtag, you know, I care. And it really kind of went big on social media. Anna Kaplis talked about it in an interview. And I just wondered, Laura, if you had kind of any thoughts on how the kind of rugby sporting community really rallied behind that hashtag and that movement in the past couple of weeks.
I mean, I think it's an amazing thing. I think having that many people voice the fact that they are very supportive of women's sport and women's rugby is a major thing. I mean, women's rugby is one of the fastest growing sports out there at the moment, and I mean, as someone that's quite new to the sport, having being able to see kind of that sort of level of vocal support for a game that I love is always a powerful thing. And I think I mean, it's an amazing, I think Eleanor's done an amazing job with the I care, and we're all fully in support of it, obviously, because we all care. And I mean, yeah, I guess there will always be people that have backwards views, if you want to call it that, I don't know. But I guess, yeah, not allowing it to stop the progress of the game is really crucial. And I think that's part of what this movement has kind of enabled.
So Charlotte mentioned there that that hashtag originated within the Welsh camp. Was there any contact between the group about it, or was it just something that happened organically?
I think it was just kind of an organic thing. I mean, in response to some of the vitriol that had been spewed by certain people in response to the sad news that obviously the Women's Six Nations has had to be cancelled. So I think it was kind of more an organic kind of response. I think for some, it felt kind of wrong to not say anything.
Yeah, I was reading kind of about what the rugby world and what the pundits have been saying going forward, because it does still highlight that there is still an issue out there with people's perceptions in the public eye, and it ties into, you know, whether they get the big broadcast deals, because how many views will it get and all of that. And I was reading a piece by a female pundit who was talking about how the highly paid, high profile male rugby players need to get behind it publicly too. And rightly or wrongly, you know, having to rely on the blokes to get the publicity for us. Do you, Corinne, do you think that's a good way forward to go with it, or maybe to continue building kind of grassroots traction like they did at the Welsh camp?
I think it's a good question. We've had some really great examples recently of male players who have come out in support. I do think that's really important, because they have such a huge fan base and following that if they lead by example, you know, that will influence a lot of people. But on the other hand, you know, as Laura has said, the community around women's rugby is massive, and it's growing, and it's really powerful to see it originate from within the women's game and have those role models. You know, what Eleanor said was fantastic, and I think spoke for a lot of people when she did come out with the I care. And I think she made a really valid point about the trolls on social media who, you know, are commenting, I don't care, nobody cares, etc. Well, they're going out of their way to do that. You know, if we see something that we don't really care about, you know, if I'm not interested in men's football or whatever, you just scroll past. And actually the fact that they're going out of their way to comment on it kind of goes beyond that. So I think the way that the women's rugby community has rallied around it is really powerful, and that's obviously the best way to confront it from the front. And if that's supported by the male players, then all the better.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you spoke about opportunity earlier, Corinne, and the thought hadn't entered my head that there's a real possibility right now that, let's say, this tournament happens in early summertime, and you can have fans in it. The possibility didn't strike me that you could have fans at the women's game, but no fans at the men's Six Nations this spring. And just, you know, how an interesting concept that would be. And, you know, fans at any sport at this stage would be fantastic. I guess going forward, so you both were obviously in training, anticipating the tournament to go ahead until the news came through. Laura, did the news affect preparation in any way? Has it affected your training schedule, or is it just, you know, keep doing exactly what you were doing until you get further confirmation of when you're going to get a game?
Well, I mean, I'm currently playing kind of as part of an extended training squad. So we had a few like day and weekend session, like training sessions booked in for the upcoming months, kind of almost in anticipation of the World Cup. I don't think I'd have got game time in the Six Nations this year anyway. And just being part of that, the Welsh camp has always been a really really great thing. But obviously, yeah, that has been affected now. And we're just kind of waiting on news of when we can get back to training. I know everyone is very excited to and keen to, but obviously we've got to do what's safe. So yeah.
Corinne, you were in the Six Nations squad last year. Obviously the preparation is different in many, many different ways. But in terms of the volume, does that change now from this time last year to what it is now, or is it the case of you're going to be doing exactly what you need to, because you could be called into a playing squad for whenever this tournament does eventually happen?
So similar to Laura, of course, it has to be very reactive at the moment. So we had whole squad camps planned for throughout January in preparation for Six Nations. Some of those residential camps have now been postponed, so that they will be ahead of the Six Nations, because there's no point holding them now if it requires so much organization around travel and COVID and all the rest. But we do have, so if you're based in Scotland, we've got we're doing regional sessions at the moment. So I'm up in Edinburgh at the moment, so we train Monday, Tuesday, Thursday during the week with local groups, and then Saturday we try and have hit outs and some game practice amongst ourselves. So we're really lucky to be being tested weekly, so that we can have those sessions safely. And of course, we'll just try keep up the momentum, so that when we do have the opportunity to have the whole squad together, including obviously the Exiles playing down in England and the rest, that we'll have that time then, yeah, and be ready to go.
Okay, I didn't realize you were getting tested as that regularly, because back in November, I think it was, I spoke to Deborah Griffin, who's on the RFU board, and she said they just don't have the money to be testing the Premiership players. So it's good to hear that you guys are at in the international squad, at least you are getting that weekly testing. Is that the same for the Welsh camp, Laura?
I can't speak for currently the current situation, but I know that back in kind of before, when we were preparing for our kind of delayed and eventually cancelled match against you guys in Scotland, we were being tested weekly. Which was with a PCR test, which was quite really good. I mean, I was being tested weekly anyway at that point, so I was getting multiple tests in school and the rugby team. So yeah.
And obviously COVID lockdown, it does mean you guys one way or the other, you do have some more time to do other stuff apart from train, apart from play. And just to finish off, I thought it'd be nice to talk, you know, what are both of you getting up to at the moment to kind of stay in a routine, get through lockdown, keep your fitness up, not go crazy.
God, yeah, good question. I'm really lucky to live in on the outskirts of Edinburgh, and it's really beautiful green spaces around here, so I try and get outdoors as much as possible to kind of keep me sane. So bike rides and just walks nearby, and break up the screen time as well. I think working from home, that's pretty important. But yeah, really lucky to still being actually able to train, and the social element of that as well with the team in the gym and on the pitch, I'm finding really helpful to keep a routine. So I'm very grateful for that.
You said working from home. What are you doing now that you've graduated and you're no longer a student?
Yeah, I work in a freelance capacity, but my main work at the moment is as a research assistant for a publication called InkCap Journal, which is an independent newsletter reporting on ecology, nature and conservation in the UK. So I'm doing helping with an investigative series with Sophie Yeo, who's an environmental journalist and founded InkCap. So that's mainly what I'm doing at the moment.
And Laura, how have you been getting on with placement? You're currently in Peterborough, aren't you? How are you finding that?
It's not the most luxurious of accommodations, but it's functional. And I mean, I've been doing all of like the S&C programs. I brought up some watercolors to do in the evenings because I'm just really sad. And I'm just something to do while watching telly or something like that. And also some crocheting. Because again, I think I'm just a grandma in the body of a 22-year-old. It's been, yeah, we've got lots of stuff to be doing on the wards, and I guess some of the time that we've saved from unfortunately not being able to train, we have been asked to kind of volunteer for shifts and things to do with vaccination and just other kind of general things in the hospital that they're slightly understaffed on. I've been signing up for those and got some shifts coming up. So least we can do is help out, but yeah.
Are you close to getting a vaccine?
I've had mine. I have had it. Yeah. My arm was, it wasn't the most pleasant vaccine, but I mean, obviously it's worth it. And I'm sure you guys will be fine when you eventually get yours.
Well, that's a nice positive note to end things on. Thank you both very much, Corey and Grant, formerly of Corpus, and Laura Blehan, currently of Girton College, for joining us here to have a chat about the Six Nations, this postponement, and the opportunities that this may present for the game going forward when the tournament does eventually take place. Thank you very much for joining us here in the Lions Den.
Thank you for listening to the Lion's Den. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to follow the Bluebird on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to keep up to date with the world of Cambridge sport.
Here's Marks, feeds it away, changing the options of who's going to be at first receiver. Corinne Grant doing the business. Oh, look at the feed from Corinne Grant. It's an